Much of the March for Our Lives events was funded by donations. Talking about donations from celebrities like George and Amal Clooney, Steven Spielberg, Kate Capshaw, Jeff Katzenberg, and Oprah Winfrey all pledged to donate $500,000 each to the rally. Then there's John Legend and Chrissy Teigen, both of whom donated $25,000. More celebrities, of course, may have donated, but did so less publicly since many were tweeting about the event and talking about it on social media. Friends, even the dating app Bumble donated $100,000 to the cause as well. And of course, all of those donations really add up, and they certainly help with the costs associated with a massive rally like what took place on Saturday. But it was not just celebrities who donated. Philanthropist and businessman Eli Broad pledged $1 million to the cause. And in case you don't know who he is, Eli Broad is 84 years old. He is described as the only person ever to build two Fortune 500 companies in two separate industries. Then there were other business leader donations that came in from Mark Benoff. He donated $1 million. Joshua Kushner, brother of Jared Kushner, donated $50,000. Gucci donated $500,000. And even the Miami Dolphins football team organization donated $100,000. Board members for the March for Our Lives are the ones that will determine how these funds, if they weren't totally spent on the rally on Saturday, how those funds will be used. And these board members include people like the following: George Kiefer, chair of the Board of Regents of the University of California; Jerry Rhodes, who is with the Friends Committee on National Legislation, which is a Washington-based lobbying group founded by the Quakers; Eileen Adams, who served under former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villagarosa; Nina Vinnick, an attorney who has a background in gun violence prevention; Vanetta Walker, who is with Board Source, and that's an organization that provides support for nonprofit leaders; and then last but not least, this board member, Melissa Schultz, who's an attorney who has expertise in nonprofit law. Now, all the donors are not known, of course, since March for Our Lives registered itself as a 501c4 organization. And if you're a C4 instead of a C3, you're allowed to keep your donor identity secret. So some of the sister rallies, or what are being called sibling rallies around the country, were self-funded. They held GoFundMe campaigns to raise money. But friends, you should not be surprised by this. George Soros's Move On organization was also behind the march, even some suggesting that he paid protesters to be there as much as $300 a person. Now, again, that has not been absolutely confirmed, but there are tweets out there that suggest that some people, in fact, maybe a large number of people, were actually paid to go and be a part of the rally. BuzzFeed News reported that MoveOn.org said it will encourage its millions of members to follow and promote the March for Our Lives movement on social media and attend the rally, and that also MoveOn.org would help with security and, listen to this, other logistics. A spokesman for Planned Parenthood said that it is, quote, teaching and hosting trainings for teens to keep the momentum going so that they don't get burned out, end quote. And then again, BuzzFeed News reported that the National Park Service permit reveals that the people in charge of the D.C. event included Dina Katz, the co-producer of Dancing with the Stars, who helped organize the Los Angeles Women's March. So, Sam, I've given a lot of names and a lot of organizations, but this cast of characters says a lot about who was behind the event on Saturday. So are you surprised by any of this? Are you surprised that these people were involved? And what do you think are their goals moving forward?
Well, Dave, as soon as you throw in any name, well, a lot of these names, particularly a George Soros name, and again, to the exact extent, whether or not he paid people to come or not, his money is found and woven all the way through nearly every type of he's there to oppose literally every aspect of this administration, every aspect of the Constitution, every aspect of freedom. And these birds of a feather here have flocked together on this event. The one thing it tells me clearly is that not only are you dealing with vast sums of millions of dollars on an issue, you got to come to the conclusion that this effort that resulted in this rally in D.C. is not something, because Dave, you've tried to put together big rallies, and so have I. They don't happen in a week's time. They don't happen in 2 weeks' time. My guess is they didn't really happen just since Parkland. Parkland became an episode to fit a play, an agenda already underway, already being thought out, already being laid out as a strategy. And so this tells me planning. It tells me birds of a feather flocking together for the same purpose of undermining, again, freedom, Second Amendment, diversion, taking the effort away from the fact you have criminals, people violating current laws. You don't need new laws. And the other is that they are not afraid to use students as tools. Students are being used as tools in an agenda that other adults have already thought out. And their anti-freedom agenda are just being facilitated. And these kids, I just believe, do not even know they're being used. They certainly don't know what it's like to live in a country without freedom and the protection of the Second Amendment. Yet they are there raising their voices, echoing what these other adults who have thought it all out are wanting them to say. That's what it's telling me.
Sam, you are 100% correct. It took us a year and a half to plan each of the major events we did on the National Mall. So you are completely correct. You don't plan something like this in a week's time, 2 weeks' time, even really a month's time. This is indeed an act in an ongoing play that has been on the stage for a long, long time. So what you're suggesting, Sam, is this, and I concur with you, this was not an organic, grassroots, student-led event as it was planned and promoted.
Absolutely not. No way. I mean, there's no way it's possible that a group of students can put together any kind of a major effort, number one. Number two, not a national effort, where you got to get yourself there to D.C., and some of them may not even be able to drive yet. And then thirdly, to integrate the media, to integrate social media, to integrate all of those things together, no way young people can do that. No way. It's professional. It's professional job, and that's what I think we're witnessing.
Gary, let me ask you this. Obviously, the kids that spoke that Sam said are being used as tools, which I concur with that. I agree completely. They're incredibly articulate young people, and they're no doubt going to be voices that we will continue to hear in the days ahead. In your opinion, what's going to be the long-term effect of this event on Congress, on the country as a whole, and even on the church?
Well, that's an interesting question, and let me get to that in a minute. But let me also say that as it relates to the discussion there with you and Sam, when I saw this march taking place, I was of the same opinion as has been expressed, that I don't see how they were able to put that together in such a short period of time. My opinion is that this march was already on the agenda, and that they were waiting for an event to take place that they could use as fodder to put that particular march on. They are opportunists. And I think that it was all planned out. And as a result of what took place down there in Florida, they said, this is our time. Let's go ahead and do it. That's just my observation. Those are my thoughts. As to the long-term effect, well, on Congress, I sure hope that they do not stoop to the level of some of the thought that was being promoted in this particular march or in this particular philosophy, because it would mean then an attack on our Second Amendment, and the Second Amendment needs to be strengthened. On the country, if we take away our Second Amendment, then what we have is a constitutional crisis. And you know what? It's going to cause crime, I think, to run in a rampancy more than it is today. You know, the reason why I have guns is not just to hunt, but for self-protection. And I think that, you know, when you put greater restriction on guns, you're going to take that away. And the unlawful person will always find a way to get a gun. On the church, well, I think the church plays a great blame here. I think because of the fact that pastors and churches have not preached the truth of the Word of God and the biblical support and the basis of the United States Constitution is why we're we are today. Listen, if we would just even evangelize more, we would see this kind of crime reduced. If that fellow who did the shooting down in Florida a month ago had come to Jesus Christ, the chances that he would have done that would be very, very slim. The church has a great responsibility of evangelism to fulfill.
Well, we do, Gary. You're 100% correct. Sam, let me go back to you and ask you this before we round out this segment and move into our solutions segment. A lot of those young people that were seen on Saturday will be of voting age by the time the midterm elections come around in 2018. Do you think they're going to play any kind of role at all?
I'm not so sure that they're going to play a tremendous role, but I tell you, over time, the preparation of large numbers of youth like this who are actually being indoctrinated when they go to things like this, they may, in fact, and they will play an increasing role, and that is a major concern. Of course, the adults who are there with them, that's what they're hoping, and that's what they're planning on happening.